Stewardship and Culture, Talk Number 4. The Church as Counterculture, Building a Church of Culture of The Church as Counterculture, Building a Culture of Generosity. Let's start this session by recalling where we've been these past few weeks. In the first presentation and discussion questions, we explored how culture is like an iceberg, with some visible things above the surface, such as individual and group ways of relating to one another and to the outward community, and a lot more underneath the surface, including common beliefs and core identity, as well as a sense of belonging to a distinctive group. An individual congregation has its own culture, that is, customs and attitudes. It answers the question, how do we do things around here? It includes their ideas about worship and sense of what the leader's responsibility is toward the faith community, what's considered normal motivations and expectations, concepts of responsibility and understandings of their mission as a church. At the same time, the neighborhood, town, or city where the church is located has its own distinctive culture, and it's important to be aware of all those aspects, its strengths, values, vulnerabilities, and sense of dis-ease. We defined stewardship and contrasted it with our majority culture's drive to achieve and be productive, which is both good and bad, and has good and bad sides to it. Then we acknowledged how, for many people, the great American dream can turn into a nightmare, including major issues with money, endlessly striving for more, seeing our personal worth in what we do or don't have, comparing ourselves to others, and drowning in debt. We explored Paul's statement about don't be conformed, but be transformed. And last but not least, we flagged 6 stewardship best practices that congregations in the United Church of Canada discovered for us and which we can adapt to our own situations. In the second talk and class forum, we discussed consumerism and how it encourages us to swim right along with everybody else by acquiring things in ever-increasing amounts, never being satisfied with having enough. We noted Jesus' story about the rich fool who was stuck on material stuff and didn't see that any of his accumulation and hoarding of assets had anything to do with other people or even with God. Whether we have a lot or a little of this world's possessions, we swim in the waters of thinking that if some is good, more is better, especially related to money. We're used to thinking that our worth is in how big of a bank account we have. It's easy to keep thinking of ourselves primarily as consumers, not as stewards of what belongs to someone else. Next, we explored contentment through Paul's eyes in Philippians 4 and noted 4 activities that can cultivate a sense of enough. All of these things are what we can ponder for our own church situation. The critical part of contentment is first fruits living, including the idea of share, save, spend in that order. See this week's handout, Stewardship Ministry, for more about that. We thought about 5 steps for simplifying our lives, the inherent usefulness of things instead of their social or symbolic value, and getting clear on the difference between real needs and mere wants. Then we launched into building a local church generosity plan by asking, what is our goal as a church? Where do we want to be headed? Finally, I referred to a bunch of aspects from A Fire with God that you could start putting into or adapting for your own unique generosity plan. Hopefully, you are starting to identify how you can strengthen aspects where your church is already on the right track, and to plan where you can teach and model some of the other essential elements to build a more generous culture. The third presentation dealt with the big technology explosion that keeps changing our world, no matter where we live. In this global economy, it has both positive and negative effects, and our churches are caught up in it as well, with repercussions for both outreach and ministries. Just about everyone is subjected to nonstop marketing, along with the market of one, expectations that organizations, including the church, will tailor services to individuals, even if they are a group of one. With a year-round stewardship approach of teaching and practice, we can do our best to counteract this selfie trend to help people see the larger picture. For example, Facebook can become an important tool for church communication. We can consciously work on specific trust with our constituents as well as members of the outward community. Double-loop communication can increase participation all along the way. At this point, it may help to recall three definitions. Generosity can be defined as the unselfish willingness to give in order to make a positive difference for the purposes of Christ. That's Robert Schnese's definition. As you start building your generosity plan, your church goals should help you point in that direction. Stewardship is whatever we do with the good news of God's love by the way that we live in every dimension of our lives, from relationships to use of time, money, and possessions, our physical abilities and spiritual gifts, our priorities, passions, and values, and the ways we care for the earth and all creatures. And first fruits living is giving to God the first and the best of what we've been given, and managing all the rest according to God's generosity. This is giving to God's work first and prioritizing our lives the best we can from what we know about God's generous grace, seen through Jesus Christ. This is a tall order and a more than lifelong process. When we create a strategy for a more generous culture in our church, we are shifting our perspective from what a person can give to the church to what God can do through people in the church with the resources God has already given them. So instead of starting with the needs of the church, it starts with the individual's sense of call and what God calls us to do together. In the book Contagious Generosity, Chris Willard and Jim Shepherd give a number of examples of churches that are making generosity a core value, remembering that they don't have to do everything, just start with something. For example, Northland Church in Longwood, Florida, used Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University to launch hundreds of small groups to teach congregants the much-needed basics of financial stewardship. Over time, they developed a comprehensive generosity plan that included budget counseling, estate planning and will seminars, and sermon series. North Point Community Church in Alpharetta, Georgia, focused on making the conversation about faith and money so natural that people don't get stressed when it comes up. Their pastor says, "Generosity is something we want for you, not from you." The authors note several churches that began hosting reverse offerings, allowing people in need to take from the offering plate, particularly in light of the effect on families due to the great U.S. recession. Other churches decided to distribute funds to their members and encourage them to find people in need to give the money to, and then post the stories of their giving on a website for the whole church to share. University United Methodist Church in San Antonio, Texas, has created an atmosphere of celebration around the practice of generosity as something that we get to do, not something we ought to do. In the Directing Pastor's regular e-newsletter, he captures the spirit of celebration in a letter that's personal and powerful and connects people's giving to the church's larger vision. No matter what you decide to put into your generosity plan, Willard and Shepherd say it needs to help you cultivate the culture, communicate core values, challenge people with clear opportunities, and embed the vision for generosity in every area of life and ministry. Church consultants Jennifer Tyler and Michael Reeves highlight 9 church behaviors that impact personal giving. 1. Clarity on what you believe as a congregation, particularly about the relationship between faith and money. For example, does the church commonly support tithing or never talk about money? Is there a history of second-mile giving? 2. Lofty, God-sized goals that are large enough for people to grab hold of the vision, work together, and know they need to depend on the Holy Spirit's being active among them. 3. A new perspective and context where people constantly learn and ask themselves, what works for others? How can we adapt others' great ideas? 4. Rethink leadership, including recruiting and training a generosity team, and encouraging the pastor to be a financial leader and model of good stewardship in the church. 5. Communicate effectively with quarterly stories and verbal updates using different media for different generations. 6. Develop a strategic plan for generosity. 7. Rethink the offering time and teachable moments in corporate worship. 8. Make it easy for people to give in various ways, including electronic options. And 9. Design relevant metrics, that is, ways to measure and evaluate giving. As we seek to grow stewards for lifelong growth, we want to move from a focus on presenting programs to nurturing lifelong stewards with generous souls. For example, in the Saints Alive Living Generously issue of Giving Magazine, you'll find, in Peter Steinke's article, 5 healthy practices that show up in congregations that nurture generous people. First, centering in God's grace as they recognize how much they've freely received. Second, not dividing the world into material versus spiritual, but seeing it all of one piece. Third, being willing to talk about giving. Fourth, knowing that generosity is developed. People often begin with their own needs, then learn about how they're blessed, and then see they can share their blessings with others. And fifth, whatever gift is given is appreciated. Your gifts count, and you make a difference. In my article on multiple giving opportunities in that same issue, one idea is to help people follow their passions. One person wants to give after a disaster she herself has survived. Another may have seen Christ at work in a childhood camp and want to provide a campership. Another experiences God greatly through music and wants to contribute to a music scholarship for community children. It's up to us not to block their passion to give in response to what they themselves have received. In A Fire with God, you'll find more ideas to consider for your generosity plan as it develops, including resources for preaching, teaching, and small groups to learn and practice new behaviors, opportunities to lift up, practice, and model good stewardship in worship together, ways to strengthen your church's leader example by the minister and the lay leadership group, how to honor different giving patterns by folks of different ages and occupations, and how to start or strengthen a planned giving program based on timing in the individual's life, not the church calendar. One hugely helpful concept from the Center for Parish Development, based on ongoing North American church research, is the commitment circle. This helps us understand different levels of involvement at different points of people's lives. The creatives make up usually about 5% of a North American church. They're the ones who unite their personal goals with the goals of the church, and they bring their personal creativity to the church planning process. They often chair all the committees and give generously of their time, energy, abilities, and money for the church's ministries. The responsibles are usually 15 to 20% of the people and are very active. They commonly fill the rest of the committee positions. Together with the creatives, they give about 75% of the church's budget. They identify with the congregation and come to all church events. The responsives may be about 20 to 30% of the congregation. They attend church infrequently, depending upon their family agendas. While they may be strong leaders elsewhere, they don't apply their leadership to the church. They give about 25% of the church's income, and they may come to an all-church event if you contact them 5 ways and offer to personally bring them. The Dormans are asleep at this time related to the congregation. They may have been creatives in the past before they had a falling out, or they moved to another state or province. They may be family members of a creative. They probably come to church only for a baptism, wedding, or funeral, or for personal care during a crisis in their lives. Those who visit them need to feel personally called to a one-on-one relationship, building personal trust over a long time. None of these groups is derelict in their duty. They're simply at a different stage in their lives. The good news about this commitment circle is knowing that we can work where it's most fruitful for the receivers and the givers. We can tailor messages to people's different commitment levels without implying that they're not as involved in church life as they should be. We can expand from our strengths as a faith community without trying to do everything for everyone. And the best news of all is knowing that positive change is possible, one person, one family at a time. We can change the percentages by increasing the number of creatives, then responsibles, and so forth around the circle as we work on one relationship at a time. Our church and youth don't know it's too late to make a difference in the consumer culture, says Christine Rausch, author of Swimming Upstream. They do not think change is impossible. Our kids will change the world. Only if we begin teaching them in the way we want them to go and finding ways for them to meet Christ regularly will they change it positively. She writes up the story of First Baptist, a composite congregation based on her real-life experiences. That church first set up a year-round calendar to help its people deal with aspects of consumerism and to introduce tithing. Then they added one element at a time from there. Their focus was never on why a person must give money, but on what we can do with the blessings God gives. So let's close with another word from our sponsor, this time from Ephesians 3, verses 14 through 21. This is a beautiful prayer for the Christians in Ephesus, that they may be strengthened in their inner being with power through God's Spirit, like a tree growing from the inside out, and that Christ may dwell in their hearts through faith as they're being rooted and grounded in love. When it comes to trees, I used to think the deeper the roots, the greater the growth. But that's not necessarily true. Apart from a very few trees that grow from a single tap root, most trees depend on their roots intertwining with the roots of other trees of their same kind to absorb together the life-giving water and nutrients out of the soil. When it comes to learning and practicing generosity, we all need roots, a living relationship directly with God. But we also need other Christians around us with whom our roots can interlace in a culture that strengthens and nourishes us together as we grow. The purpose of this generosity process isn't about supporting the church. It's about the power to comprehend the breadth and length and height and depth of God's love, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses all of our efforts and strategies to accomplish abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine. I look forward to this last week of our class forum interactions and to talking with you directly on our final conference call. So here are our required readings. Christine Rausch, Swimming Upstream, pages 82 through 98. And articles in generousstewards.wordpress.com called Stewardship Ministry in the Stewardship Ministry in the Local Church section. The recommended readings are pages 75 through 77 and 100 to 111 in A Fire with God. These are the questions to consider and respond to. 1. What difference might it make to move from an emphasis on presenting programs in the church to growing lifelong stewards of the gospel? What behaviors would you see among the church leaders and people in their interactions and attitudes? How might you help such a transformation happen? 2. What difference could awareness of the commitment circle make in recruiting volunteer church leaders? Would the nominations process be different in any way from the way it often is now? How could this be part of good stewardship? 3. What steps has your church leadership made to widen the concept of stewardship from just the financial pledge campaign to a more holistic understanding? What further steps might you take? 4. What images and assumptions do church leaders use for stewardship in their communication within your denomination or faith community? To what age group does that language most naturally apply? How could you speak about stewardship with other age groups in a different way? 5. If you were using the Generosity Plan worksheet and essentials checklist, what goals or elements have you begun to identify? What will be your next step? 6. Comment on one idea from the video that caught your attention. I'll talk with you further in this week's class forum. Thank you.